I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Please welcome Mr. Blake Wexler!
Hey, everybody, this is Blake Wexler, a.k.a. I smell Wex and chaos here. Joel's lounging in Jack's chair. Why is Blake casting mischievous stares in Zeit's direction? Ooh. Miles, this surely is a dream. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't dig it.
Off the top of the dome, Blake.
Isn't that what
amazing.
He says after? Doesn't he throw in a random dig it?
Oh, there's a dig it in there. I didn't want to take that many liberties. And for me, I don't have the confidence for a dig it. But yeah, Marcy took a dig it for sure.
What was Marcy Playground's story? Do we
That's
know?
That's a great question.
Like, was that like a playground they played at? I know, like, I remember growing up, the rumor at Linkin Park was called Linkin Park because they wanted to be near Limp Bizkit when you were like at Tower Records. Rifling through CDs.
Who wouldn't be? Who
but I don't even know if that's true. This was in the era of all of the bad rumors that were word of mouth.
I think Marcy Playground wanted to be near Macy Gray, I think is why they did it. So,
do you guys
sure
want the Wikipedia
why.
Answer? Or do you want to keep just throwing out guesses? Okay. The band is named after the Marcy Open Grade School in Minneapolis, which is the alternative school John Wozniak attended.
Oh, okay. So it's relevant.
Yeah, he said he chose the name because many of his songs were inspired by his childhood.
Oh,
so there you go.
I like it. There's some depth there that I didn't see coming. I like
that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Blake, what's new? How you been since the last time? Since last we spoke?
Since last? Things have been so good. And now, since watching your hiccups, I honestly have... It's weird because Joelle was very sweet and said what I do feel in my heart. But I also do see it as a disadvantage for you and a way for me to assert dominance in a conversation. So
everything I say, you're like, whoa, really? That sounded smart, folks. You guys leave this guy? He's the host?
You know, like how a good guest tries to do. Assert dominance.
Just every time. It's like, I'm sorry. I wish I could take... the point you're trying to make about Ketanji Brown Jackson, you know, like have it connect, but it just sounds so jokey with your cartoon hiccups.
Yeah. Also, I wasn't listening.
We're good. So we're good. No, I think we've made it. I think we've
cross the Rubicon into non-diaphragmal spasmsville. Okay?
Both terms are like kind of jarring, where hiccup is a very jarring term to hear, like audibly. And then diaphragm spasms also gives you like kind of makes you recoil when you hear it. You know, they're both like a little over the top.
Yeah. Diaphragm spasm does feel like some kind of like you're on your way to death. Like if you're like, and then they had the diaphragm spasms. And you're
It was really bad.
Mm-hmm. It's that bad.
That's like right before the death rattle is
right.
The,
exactly. Yeah. First, you cough really quietly into a white handkerchief and there's a little blood. And then the next step is he's got the diaphragm spasms.
Yeah. You know? Where's your handkerchief that you usually carry around with you?
My little blood handkerchief.
Your blood chip.
There was a tweet, I forget, like maybe a year ago that someone wrote that was just so funny about how gentle people are with that cough into the white handkerchief in the film. It's always like, just so light. And then it's like, no.
Oh, no, yeah, that slow reveal of like, oh, it's tuberculosis.
You got the burps. You got the Burks, right? You got the Burks, fam.
Joel, you're right. The slow reveal makes it, because if it was the other, like...
a horror movie. Now you're horrified. Right. But this way, you're like...
Oh, right.
Oh, no. Oh, no, it's just a cough. And now they're going to die. Oh, tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're just like... Or they're going up his flight of stairs. Are you okay, Papa? I'm fine. You go ahead. You go ahead. Yeah. They wipe their mouth. Insert shot. Bloody handkerchief. Papa's in trouble. Anyway, let's tell the people.
No, I have more to say on this. Also with the handkerchief thing, it is funny that they do tuck it away, you know, where they don't tell anyone. They're like, oh, no, I'm fine. No one's ever like, I'm bleeding out of my mouth. I'm bleeding. Like, nobody ever draws attention to it.
Right. No one's like, oh, my God, is this bad?
Ew, look.
Mom.
Am I contagious? Should I not be around the children? It really should be their first thought. assholes.
Good point.
Like,
even
I'll
better
just soldier
point.
On like, valiantly. Well, make everyone else in my house sick.
Right. It's like, well, I don't want to look vulnerable because then I'll be a nuisance. So I'll just endanger everyone else. That's really wonderful. No, I do want to keep talking about that because. You wouldn't just have a bloody cough out loud, scaring everybody, coughing all over like the white tablecloths. People would be nervous. Because I guess, is that like the earliest version of hiding your zombie bite?
Probably.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, like the whole vampirism, like the entire genre comes from the Victorian era where we're dealing with a lot of new diseases and a lot of death happening.
Right.
And so, yeah, it makes sense to me that, like, out of the horror genre, what comes after vampires is typically zombies. And yeah, you know, they were trying to hide their sickness. We still had to go to work. There was no social help at that time.
No
mutual aid to come in and uplift your family. Oh, you got sick? Sorry, your family's on the street. You got to just deal with that.
Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, you're sick? Oh, what are you? You're sick.
He's weak and God has not chosen him.
Yeah.
That's anyway.
The devil got in him, so sorry.
Y'all, I'll just say this. It's all about preventative care. If you're coughing blood, speak to a doctor. And and that's not medical advice. That's just me watching a lot of movies and being like, man, if they spoke to the doctor, this movie would be less interesting. But anyway, let's talk about what we
are going
to talk about.
It is always a red handkerchief, too, you know, or it's never a red handkerchief.
It's
usually
white.
It would be funny if it was red and it's like, guys, is there blood on this? I can't. Is it blood or is it saliva?
I don't know. Here, rub it on something white and see if the red comes off.
Can I see your white one? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Rub them together. Oh, yeah. And then that's an added 10-minute scene of everybody arguing the best way to determine whether or not the red handkerchief does, in fact, have blood on it. Jessica, we got to ask you, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
Ooh, search history. So we'll just dive right in. I recently was searching the term excited delirium, which is something I've been wondering about and thinking about a lot lately because it is a made up diagnosis that has been taught. So I live in Minneapolis, and obviously there's been a lot going on in Minneapolis the last few years. And excited delirium is a made up diagnosis that has been taught to the Minneapolis police by one of our health systems. And the idea of excited delirium is that, so this is a diagnosis that is not recognized by the American Medical Association. But the idea is that you can become so worked up and so agitated that your body, you go into lactic acidosis, your body becomes like highly acidic and it can be fatal. And so police are taught that excited delirium is something that they should be looking out for when they're interacting with the community, interacting with citizens. But what happens is that because they are taught this diagnosis, when they see someone really agitated, they think excited delirium, I have to restrain this person. This is dangerous. And then the restraint itself can be a complication that leads to death. And this is used much more against African-American men, restraint and the diagnosis of excited delirium. And so I've been, you know, sort of trying to research it, figuring out what's going on right now with the Minneapolis police being taught this. We were told that they weren't, that they had stopped teaching excited delirium. But then recently it came out that this health system was actually still teaching people about excited delirium. They had just renamed it agitated delirium. So to kind of get around the ban on teaching this.
So is that more of a way to justify like more aggressive ways of restraining people? Or is it are they trying to like preempt some kind of like liability if someone is potentially like what's the logic from the law enforcement side of even bothering to distribute this information to their officers?
Right. So a lot of them have been taught that like this has been information that's been passed down for years, that this is a real thing that they need to be worried about. And that it's like, it's a danger. Like if someone is showing extreme agitation, it's dangerous to their own lives. So in the officer's mind, they are thinking, I need to restrain this person, get them under control so that they don't go into lactic acidosis. And
is that common? Like people dying from lactic acidosis?
I mean, it can happen like with marathon runners. It can happen with like extreme exertion. But doctors I've talked to have said like, you can't tell if someone has a high acid content in their blood just from looking at them, just from observing them. Even a doctor can't tell that.
That's the thing that it's amazing how, because, you know, when I first heard you say this and you said they were teaching, you know, the cops this, basically, the first thing that I thought of was, oh, this is just another targeting thing. They're going to use this to target Black people, people of color, less fortunate people. They're going to marginalize people. This is a targeting tool, right? And it's amazing how many professions that they will give cops to give them the right to hurt people. You ain't a fucking doctor. What the hell you, like, how can you diagnose? Oh, that person right there has excited delirium, which I just learned about 2 weeks ago. I can, get the fuck, what? It makes no sense, but it is not surprising because they will talk about or give credence to anything if it can lead to the ability to target marginalized and oppressed individuals and groups, and it's very disappointing.
And there's this element to it where the thing we see with law enforcement is they're constantly taught all these ways to put things in your subconscious that a person you're talking to is about to kill you, or is an immediate threat. Whether that's like the warrior mentality, warrior approach of law enforcement officers that we see being taught, which is like, you're not there to serve and protect. You're there to fuck people up in case they get out of line. And you always have to be on your guard because you are a warrior and now you're only facing enemy combatants out in the field or whatever. That this seems like another way, a very insidious way to just almost use someone's sense of helping somebody to justify, like you're saying, Jaquise, like flipping the switch to like a violent interaction.
Totally. And then the sort of horrible irony of it is that then if someone does die in police custody, well, it was excited delirium.
Right.
You know, that is then used as an excuse. It's used as an excuse both to restrain or to inject someone with ketamine in the case, in Minneapolis. This is something that has happened a lot in Minneapolis, inject someone with ketamine. And then if the person, dies in police custody, then it can be blamed on this made-up diagnosis of excited delirium.
Right. Oof. That is...
I never heard of this until you just said it. And it's a very interesting thing that there are so many terms that the people who are you know, tasked with protecting and serving us, as, you know, the little bumper sticker they put on their vehicle says, that there are so many terms that they don't let us know about, right? You know, they can do all these things, and then after the fact, we're like, well, there's this thing called excited delirium that we, you know, we look for. And it's just like, what? Like, why not? Yeah. Why not bring that out? Why not be, if that's something that you're really looking for, then that should be, you know, bullet point one, two, three. These are the things the public should know. And they're not. Yeah, I mean, but the public does know, I guess, because you know and you searched it, but it's not readily available. Like, you know, most of us have never heard of this. And
it's not like you need a PSA for, you know, the excited delirium because it's such a problem. But yet again, it just throw it on the pile of, you know, racist medical myths that we've used over the years to, you know, whether it's prohibiting drugs or not giving proper medical care to people of color. Just so many ways to trick your brain to just continue down the path of just discriminating or treating people a certain way. Jono, what's something you think is overrated?
Overrated would be getting married in your 20s. I recently got married in my 30s. And I got to say, the gifts you get, way better. I remember giving people wedding gifts back in the day when I was in my 20s. My normal friends were getting married. I'd go to like Goodwill, get a bunch of plates, you know, anything I could find there. I got one of my best friends a trophy for his wedding. And like, I'm sure, what good did that ever do? But now my friends and family have upgraded my kitchen. It's just like I'm doing all the Masterclass chef's things now with all my new knives.
Right.
Yeah, good cookware. I just drank some Nespresso from my little big Virtuo thing. It is nice. I gotta say.
Wait, Miles just got married. What's the best gift you got?
Oh, shit. The best thing. You know, honestly, it's a set of cutting boards. I really wanted good fucking cutting boards. I had the same fucked up like wood block from IKEA I've been rocking around for ages, and it just can't really do work. And I saw this shit, these like cool like post-consumer made pressed board like things that you could put in the dishwasher, fucking anything. It was just super strong. I have like 5 different sizes. See, and you know I fuck with it because I'm already like, and I got my cutting boards. and I think that is the difference, right? Because I totally feel you, Jono, on the point of like, in my 20s, man, half the time I'd be like, yo, motherfucker, I'm broke as shit. Like, I'm here, okay? Yeah. Like, y'all had a destination wedding and I'm here, okay? Yeah. I'll hook you up with some weed when we get back in town.
Me wearing a suit is the gift.
Right, exactly. or going in with my friends being like, okay, we'll go to Macy's where the registry's at and we'll each buy one of the hand towels. But we'll put them both together from both of us, so it looks like at least they got the whole set, but it's from two of us.
There you go.
But now, I think as you get older, your actual imagination for the kind of shit that you want expands because you're living a little more. If I got married in my 20s, I would have asked for a volcano vaporizer.
Stop it.
I'm serious. That's all. I would have been like, that's it. I don't need anything else. I'm like, I have plastic plates and shit. I'm good. Now I got nice drinking glasses, you know. What was the nicest thing for you, Jono?
I mean, the thing I was most excited about was these knives. I got these Gustav Classic set.
It's
I mean, like, I cut my fingers so deep when I cut now. It's like...
bone, baby.
Yeah. Unless you're giving yourself a laceration, you don't have good enough knives. You're just getting a surface cut.
I feel like I got to find a friend to like... going on a scheme and be like, girl, we got to get married. So and then we'll just divide the gifts afterwards and go our separate ways.
Yeah.
We don't have to tell anybody. But I could use a kitchen upgrade is all I'm saying.
Man, you could really scam some people. Just give yourself a fake destination wedding and like invite everyone you know and just say like, if you can't make it, here's our registry. It's fine. And then just go to Hawaii.
It's a 1 month journey to the venue. But... no pressure, obviously. Yeah. Most people can't come. Aside from the gifts, do you think there's any advantages to getting married in your 30s aside from your 20s?
Yeah, I mean, like, you just know you know who you are, and everyone else in their 20s is still figuring it out. So, like, you know, you can like have a better starting point for your relationship, or you're not just like, but I mean, like, do you know how you do the chores? Do you know how you process your emotions? All that stuff is like, you're like, okay, I have a better starting place. I'm not like in the wilderness with like my own shit.
Right.
Before my wife or husband or spouse at any point has to figure it out for me.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, still, you know, we're all growing still to this day, but
of course
it is easier. I would be an absolute mess if I got married 10 years ago.
Oh yeah. I would have, I mean, we probably would have split up before the wedding. Cause we would have fought about gifts on the register.
Right.
Like I would have been so juvenile and adolescent about it. Like I probably would have like crossed a bridge by saying something stupid and like the fight, like, why do we even need that? Like, you can't even cook and don't even act like getting this new pot set is going to fix
that.
No. I need the cutting boards. Then I would have found my ass. My mom again, she's like, oh, you moving back in? I'm like, yeah, mom, she doesn't fucking get it.
Wow.
But yeah, I don't know. I think there is something a little bit more advantageous. I guess you do know yourself. That's why I'm always blown away by people who are like high school sweethearts. I'm like, y'all really made it through like your fucking late 20s?
Mm-hmm.
For real?
That's crazy. Especially now, because like my grandma did that when she was 19. She like snuck out her window and eloped to the boy who's her next door neighbor, and they met in like first or second grade.
Oh my God.
And they like snuck back into their windows at the end, like their separate windows at the end of the night, and didn't tell anybody for like a week or two. But you know, back in those days, like divorce, nearly unheard of. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, we did it. So we're in it.
And everyone had like stress-based chronic illness. So, different eras we're in now, for sure.
Totally.
That's so romantic, though. Damn, you're over here being like, yeah, she eloped with the neighbor boy. I'm like, what is this, some fucking Disney stuff?
Yeah.
So stinking cute. Love it. Adorable.
That's the other thing. It's always like cute. There's never the like, man, it was fucked up and we just toughed it out together. Like typically it's like they're exceptional relationships. You're like, I was in love with him since third grade.
Yeah, you don't see the struggles after that, though. That's the warmer movie version of it. It's like where they won the war, and then also they had to deal with a bunch of PTSD afterward.
Right, exactly. And they just raised a family, no problems, no problems at all. He sorted
my best
out.
From elementary school did that too. When she was in second grade, she picked out a kid, and she was like, "I'm gonna marry that kid," and then she did.
Whoa!
And they still got married when she was 20. Yeah, she was having her first baby like a couple days after her 21st birthday. Just nuts. It was nuts. Four kids now.
Hey, I don't know how y'all do that. What I'm trying to say. What's the secret aside from just being more afraid of being alone than being together forever? What is the secret? Please let us know.
Secretly just flame everybody.
Yeah. Listen. Solve the human struggle for us, please.
Right. That was honestly, you're like, yeah, I'm salty because that's how I used to always. That was, Miles used to be the salty loner guy who was like, I don't get this shit because I was like, I haven't sorted out my own parents' divorce yet. So I was more just like looking outside of myself. I'm like, that's the problem over there. I'm like, therapy? What? Huh? Oh. Oh, thank you. I need to do some forgiveness. Okay, got it. Anyway, shout out to Dr. Shamitra, my therapist. I know I haven't seen you in a minute, but that's because you're the shit. You know what I mean? Dana, what's something you think is underrated?
Oh, I think like the broad multi-camera sitcom that people on the coast don't watch, but that the Midwest loves. I love like just like the cheesiest, broadest sitcom on the planet, like, and everybody loves Raymond. Like, I think, like, and I obviously those aren't actually underrated. They're like, they are properly rated. They're hugely rated, but like, I think they're underrated in like cool communities.
Mm.
And I really like them. I've been rewatching like Two and a Half Men. Obviously, you know, some problematic elements, but
oh, what happened? Is everything cool with John Wolfe? Or what's that guy's name? John something? That was the bad guy of the two, right?
Isn't Charlie?
Stop.
What happened with Charlie Sheen?
I don't know.
Stop it.
Wasn't he canceled for something?
Oh my God. Charlie Sheen's canceled.
I don't know. I actually don't know. I'm just saying things. I
have
want
a lot
rumors.
Of signed Major League DVDs that I'm going to have to get rid of soon if he is canceled. That
I actually have no idea. I really don't know.
No, he is. No,
but
he is.
But I love it. So
I'm joking. Wait, so you're saying the classics, like you're dusting off the classic sitcom, or do you even see any, like what you're seeing now?
No, I'm literally saying like new multicam sitcoms too, like that no one watches, like The Neighbors on CBS or whatever.
Wait, so what's that about?
Exactly. The Neighborhood. It's like a multicam with like Max Greenfield and like Cedric the Entertainer. And it's like just the broadest multicam about a white family moving into a black neighborhood. And it's not great, but I'm like, there is something about it that I'm like, it's doing something. It's filling a void.
Right.
You know, it's filling a void that needs to be filled.
I'm like, the way you talk about it, it sort of reminds me of how I talk about terrible Christmas romance films that come out of Hallmark, where it's like, yo, dude, the worse, the better.
Yeah. Honestly. Yes. I think like as the more like multicam, like the more that you could make fun of it for being stupid, the more I like it.
Got it. So, I mean, I guess that's the other thing too. Like there's a comfort in like really predictable, like writing also.
I love a laugh track. I'm like, tell me when to laugh. Tell me.
Oh, okay. Wait, so, okay. What's, if you're going to put somebody onto a sitcom right now, what would you recommend?
Honestly, I'm like, I'm just telling everyone I know to watch rewatch Two and a Half Men, and they don't like it. And they're like, stop telling me to watch that.
Skip past the Charlie Sheen of it all.
That's all.
And it's fucking dope. Okay, cool.
Watch Abbott Elementary.
Oh, yeah. But Abbott Elementary is like
that's
good.
Single cam.
Like, that's like,
yeah.
This is what different than what I'm talking about. It's like, good.
We're talking.
Like, that's not what I'm talking about.
That kind of shit.
I'm talking about like it's like an opiate for your brain. Like, you're literally like, it's like, you feel like you're on Xanax. You know? You know?
Yeah, I call that, listen, no, I call that depression TV.
Yeah.
I am way into it. My depression TV was Friends for a long time. I don't really like anybody on that show as a human being. Like, not the actors are fine, but like the characters, you know, difficult human beings would not want to live with. But man, something about that show was just like, I'm going to get through the day and it's going to be fine. It's going to be okay. And once you watch a show so many times, now you know the beats of it. And when you can start saying the lines with that, you're like, it's time to get out of bed. I have to go do something.
That's how
else.
It was with The Office. And I was like the UK and American version of The Office. Mm. I would like sing. I could like you're saying, you know, the beats of it to the point of, like, I think I'm just listening to music now.
No. Mm-hmm. The Office is music. I mean, The Office is like, I can do a karaoke to every episode of The Office.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, like A Man on Hinge. I'm like, wow, I know every line of The Office.
See, I don't know what it is about it. I don't know what it is about it.
I think it's just also good.
Although recently there was that episode where someone took a dump on Michael in Michael's office and on the carpet, and he says this thing where I'm like, I've always been like, you know, since, like, you know, we've been more aware of like ignorance in workplaces and more sensitive to it, like especially after 2020, I'm like, Michael Scott rubs me in such a fucking like the wrong way, like. It's weird how my relationship to Michael Scott has changed over the years. And I'm like, this motherfucker is the exact problem with all these fucking.
But isn't that the point? Like, I think
it is. Yeah, it is. But I think I shifted to this place of like, I don't know how funny sometimes like even benign ignorance can be to me anymore. But it's like it ebbs and flows, because other times I watch it, I'm like, this shit is so stupid. I love it. But so in my mind, like when people always talk about, you know, they always speculate, like, what would The Office be doing now or whatever? I'm like, dude, this guy would be such an alt-right person. And then in the fucking episode, he's like, I love Joe Rogan. He brings up Fear Factor and he goes, anything Joe Rogan does. And I was like, okay, there's Exhibit A for Michael Scott.
I mean, that's who Michael Scott is for sure. I mean, I always think about the episode where he pretends like they have to stay an extra hour because of something corporate wants them to do, just so he can like make sure that they all come to his party.
Right,
because he's like,
right,
well,
right,
I know
right.
that you thought you were going to stay late, so you don't have any plans, so you have to come to my party.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, that's so funny and crazy. Yeah. That's sick.
And still no one comes to his party. Or, I mean, one of my favorites was Dwight's date to the dinner party that he wasn't invited to. Okay, that anyway, this is not an Office podcast. We actually have that. It's called The Office Deep Dive with Brian Baumgartner on the network, so check that shit out, not this one. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in exactly to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, right, which is different than empathy, yeah, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Let's talk about this little thing called Fox News. I think I think it's safe to say, without saying, but I will just for the purposes of clear communication, that we're all pretty clear on how partisan the news has become over the last few decades. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen the effects that it has not only on like just the voting population and, you know, what sort of the political views people have, but also like because of that has caused a lot of chaos even within families where people are like, yep, you know, people regularly say like, lost my uncle to Fox News, or like my Fox News family, or, you know, my family's a Fox News family. We've all heard this. And, you know, a lot of people, again, because of this, we've seen how sort of this sort of Fox News radicalization process can take hold over time. And not to say that watching enough MSNBC doesn't do something to you, too, because it does. you see that when people aren't bothered by real things that are happening in real time in front of their faces. But these two researchers just published a study on what they call partisan coverage filtering, which is basically that if you're like a particularly partisan news outlet, you're going to basically selectively report on things. Because if it's fucking up the narrative that you need to keep your listener viewers or whatever in check to be go along with, oh, this is what the GOP is, then yeah, you're not going to report on the bad shit because that's going to completely threaten this sort of worldview that you're trying to create. And, you know, again, this is all this does is create a person who's now operating in a reality who has a biased set of facts that they're operating from and how they look at the world. So for Fox viewers, you would say that that biased set of facts would be something like that COVID isn't that serious, that masks don't work, that Trump was one of the most effective presidents, Democrats let like looters run their cities, and white people are the most vulnerable group on the planet Earth. That's sort of like the general sort of nonstop flow of bias information that you get out of there. So these researchers wonder, well, what happens if you just switch someone's media diet in the other direction? Does this have any effects? And the simple answer is yes. So this is how they sort of did this study. Of the 763 qualifying participants, they randomized 40% of the treatment group. So the other 60% weren't like 100% red till I bleed. My eyes are red. My hair is red. I'm so red. I'm GOP, Jackie, whatever you. These people are full blown Fox brain people. So then what they did was to change their slant of their media diet. Quote, we offered treatment group participants $15 an hour to watch 7 hours of CNN per week during September 2020. So this is in the lead up to the fucking election. Okay. And they then they were prioritizing the hours at which, like, if the participants that they basically said, if you're normally watching Fox News at that time, we'll give you $15 to watch CNN instead. And then at the end of it, we're going to kind of survey you, ask you questions about what you're seeing and what the information is that you're sort of taking in. And what they did is, quote, at the 3-day mark, the viewers took a survey and they found, quote, large effects of watching CNN instead of Fox News on participants' factual perceptions of current events, like their beliefs and knowledge about the 2020 presidential candidates. They discovered changes in attitudes about Donald Trump and Republicans, as well as a large effect on their opinions about COVID. They even then went on to articulate observations that were essentially like, oh, so Fox just won't cover anything about Trump if it's bad. And they're saying like, oh, this is something new. Now, this is, I don't know what to make of this. I know jokingly people are like, oh, well, there's the Democrats' midterms fucking strategy is just pay people to not watch Fox. And sure, maybe that could be a weird, subtle unemployment plan for Fox viewers to be like, hey, we'll give you some money if you just watch CNN a couple hours, just a little bit, just to see where that goes. But I don't know. I don't. Does this resonate with either of you or in general?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to recall. Oh, this is sad. What's the school shooting after Sandy Hook, the one in Florida?
It's Marjorie Stoneman Douglas.
Yes. There, a kid from there was talking about, like, how he had to move out of his father's house because his father started to believe that the school shooting that he survived was fake.
Right.
Which is, like, I mean, I think really goes to show the power of television and really these news networks and their ability to corrupt and persuade people to believe that whatever they're saying is the truth. And I mean, we talked a little bit yesterday about the ways communities sort of insulate people and makes it comfortable to stay there. And I just wonder if there's a way, like, it just seems to me that the only way to stop Fox News from continuing to just out and out lie to folks is for the government to come in and be like, we do have to pull your funding because just from a factual rate, like, you guys are no longer a news program, you're entertainment. And it's something that was talked about a long time ago. It's like maybe 7 or 8 years ago. Like, you know, a lot of news sources are, you know, get funding or tax breaks or whatever, because, you know, it's an essential part of our democracy is that people have access to the press. And then, you know, but then that's obviously a slippery slope of, like, is, you know, we can barely agree on facts anymore anyway.
Right.
But yeah, I guess if you can, you know, I've heard of people being clever enough to, like, block Fox TV on their parents' television, on their grandparents' television, on that weird uncle's television. You know, I would like to see more of that. Get proactive with your families. Starts with you, as I like to say. So yeah, if you can go in there and block that channel and be like, well, you know, CNN's right there. Maybe they've got some information you can use today.
Oh boy, they're like, no, I can't. It's all crap. And they're going to just talk nonsense about my president.
And then they'll go to YouTube and fall down an entirely different, terrifying hole. Oh, God.
Yeah. You inadvertently, you're like, well, I turned that spigot off and they went to go drink from the toxic cesspit.
Oh, how many things can we block in this house? Do we just unplug everything so they can't watch it?
I'm putting child parental locks on all of it.
I mean, that's what other people do, is like they'll put, like, they'll restrict websites for their parents or put the parental locks on the things and then just, like, play dumb when it comes to them. Like, Fox won't come on the TV anymore. I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
That's weird. You got to call your cable provider about
you
that.
You might have it. Yeah, in which case they'll probably just be like, are your kids trying to fucking keep you from hearing the good word? But I mean, yeah, like, to your point about the power of television, it really is, like, so many people are entranced by this, you know, the spectacle of the television, you know, and that everything that emanates from it is somehow the truth. And people, like, it's the same thing with the internet. There are a lot of people who are like, Well, if it's on the internet, like, it's, and people are saying it so forcefully, like, there must be some like shred of truth to it. In the same way, they're like, well, if this person's on TV, like, they don't just let anybody on TV, that it has, there must be a shred of truth to that. But yeah, it is really frightening, like you're saying, that example of like, you're even looking at something that's your child lived through, but because of the, like, you're just being constantly bombarded with this kind of messaging, you're like, I don't know, maybe my kid's trauma is a lie.
He's an actor that they paid to treat. Like, the level of mental gymnastics you have to do to stop believing that your own child survived a shooting in your own neighborhood. Like, you, I mean, unfortunately now we've all lived through a tragedy where you're hearing sirens from everywhere, where you're getting calls, where you're on social media. Like, we know what happens when tragedy strikes. It's very, like, clear cues. So it's very, you know, challenging for me to believe that this guy didn't actually live through the event and then get so brainwashed. He was like, what I experienced didn't actually happen.
Right.
That is bizarre. That is, I don't know if there's a word, but it's broaching crazy.
Well, like, who knows how many layers are there too? I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, this is, I'll give this person the goodwill of thinking they maybe thought they were a good parent, and maybe there's some level of guilt that their kid was exposed to that they're in denial of. That turns out, I'm not excusing it, but I'm trying to figure out how you go from like, whoa, my kid's all shook up, to nah.
It's so scary. I think that, like, so much of empathy is humanizing the people that you might have a differing view of. And, you know, when these people turn on CNN, it's like, oh, these aren't lizards. You know what I mean? Like, these are actually human beings with, like, heartbeats, who, like, you actually can add a human face to the other side of, like, what they're used to hearing. And it's like, oh no, these are people like me. Not exactly like them, but, like, it's enough to be like, oh, it's not batshit crazy that, like, you know, the fact that there's a virus.
They don't have lizard skins.
You know, so
when I think that was a thing they saw in the research, was just hearing over and over, like, a measured thing from people who were like doctors, be like, yeah, it's really important to keep yourself safe, rather than the other side of being like, but Fauci's lost it. I mean, he's the new Dr. Mengele. You're like, what the fuck?
Oh my God.
That probably will put you in a different posture when you're trying to understand or process information. So I don't know. If only it were that simple, just to be like, just watch CNN and then you'll be indifferent about racism. So you can get any way you live, basically, when you're watching that good old TV. Speaking of overlords, I want to check in with Howard Schultz, who is the on again, off again Starbucks CEO, as I mentioned earlier. And he is, again, he's fighting for his corporate overlord life right now. The historic unionization of a Starbucks in Buffalo was a high point for people who are actually invested in labor rights and equity. But if you're in the C-suite of a publicly traded company, it looked more like when the spaceships from Independence Day pulled up, like, where they're looking at that and they're like, they're trying to fuck us up. And that's why we see so much money going into union busting and fucking with people who are trying to organize unions in their workplaces. So he was so concerned, right? He came out of retirement to try and reason with the people, some of these employees in Buffalo. This was back in November when we covered it. There was that clip of him, like, likening, like, the unionizing workers to, like, people in the Holocaust who are sharing a blanket to, keep themselves from not dying in the freezing cold. And he's like, and that's what we try and do at Starbucks, is share the blanket as a way to be like, so you don't have to unionize. Where you're like, I'm sorry, who are the Holocaust victims in this metaphor exactly? Oof. What are you saying? So that obviously went to the sound of crickets. Those workers successfully unionized. And, you know, this is like the thing that a lot of people who are, you know, who are OMG afraid of unionizing, they see places like Starbucks that have so many locations that if slowly they begin to unionize more and more, that a company that hires so many people has like such a sort of baseline for what is equal pay, that affects fucking everyone else in the space. That's why you see so much money being poured into it, because down the road, they're like, then I have to make less monies. So when that didn't work, he returned to his post as CEO. And he's been, you know, I presumably because he thinks he can keep the unionizing from happening. And he had another employee roundtable discussion again recently. And my God, this is him getting... We want to get to. I don't see, you're not employees. We're partners. You guys are partners. even though you don't have any stake in the profits of this place, we're partners, right? And he wanted to just kind of let everybody know all the cool stuff that's happening at Starbucks, basically as a way to sort of say, like, we're going to stop. He said, we'll stop doing stock buybacks, and we're actually going to pour that money back into the company through, like, making better stores, maybe wages, who knows, won't say that explicitly, and just, you know, making things nicer for Starbucks as it is. The people, again, were so fucking bored at this event that then he goes on to be like, okay, that didn't work. What else can I get these like really poor working people? How can I get them excited about the future of Starbucks? Listen to this fucking pivot.
Okay. How many people have followed what has been happening with NFTs?
They're long.
Nervous laughter.
How many people have participated in investing in NFTs?
We're poor, bitch.
How are you doing? Okay, for
one
now.
Guy raised his hand.
Okay. So if you look at, I've tried to be a student with all this, not being a digital native. If you look at the companies, the brands, the celebrities, the influencers that are trying to create a digital NFT platform and business, I can't find one of them that has the treasure trove of assets that Starbucks has, from collectibles to the entire heritage of the company.
So this guy's
not any entertainment industry with solidified characters, art, stories, way, way backed up, has more than, I'm sorry, the drink company Starbucks?
Right.
Sir? You sound like an idiot, and that's just on a business level. Not
Amblin Entertainment as a production company has more exploitable IP than fucking Starbucks. But again, this is what he was saying. He was dangling. He's like, wouldn't that be sick? Like, y'all, like, Starbucks is going to start doing NFTs. How the fuck does that benefit these people? And what the fuck did you think they were going to be like, finally? Because what, he'll pivot to, and you know who's going to get first swipe at those NFTs, y'all, the partners.
That is, what's wild to me is these, you know, millionaire, billionaire CEOs coming to talk to folks who make 1/120th of their salary a year, you know, and not ever sitting down to actually address these issues, but like talking to them like they're at a board meeting, you know,
right.
It doesn't compute at all to their daily lives. You're not at all addressing their needs or concerns. You're just adding frivolous things to a company that they genuinely don't care about. Here's the thing you need to understand. If you're paying your employee minimum wage, if you're paying your employee $10 over minimum wage, they don't give a shit about your company. They don't care. This is not a family to them. They don't have the time. They came in here to make sure their kids could eat. Okay.
Right. It's from the last story where it will be criminal to not have a job. Those are the stakes. That's why I'm here. Not because I love you, Howard.
Even if they really enjoy making their little latte foam art, or, you know, this Starbucks is a hub in their community and people come in and use the internet and it, you know, that feels warm and fuzzy to them. Like, even if those things are true, it's still most likely not their dream place. You know, most of them are not like, oh, I can't wait to open a Starbucks of my very own. Like, they literally just came here to work. And when we make it so that, you know, our jobs have to support our health care, when our jobs have to support us past retirement, then it's important that jobs do those things. Like, yeah. You really can't have it both ways of being like, well, we don't want the government to, like, support people independently. You know, they got to work. But we also aren't going to make it so that workplaces have to support people in a way that is realistic.
No. And please don't unionize and make us have to actually honor those honor that relationship where I'm telling you we're a family. And this is the thing, even though the NFTs thing didn't fucking, everyone laughed at that one, he then just fully takes the fucking mask off and hits people with his assessment of what workers fighting to have stable and life-sustaining wages looks like. Unionizing, this is his unionizing take.
Here's where it gets a little sensitive, because I've been coached a little bit, but I do want to talk about something pretty serious.
Uh-oh.
We can't ignore what is happening in the country as it relates to companies throughout the country being assaulted in many ways by the threat of unionization.
Oh, You can't assault a company. Assault, it's not a person.
Literally using the word assault for that is actually truly so absurd.
Assault.
Someone coached him to say that. He should fire
no,
him.
No, I think he was coached to not say that.
They're like, please don't say this. Please. They're like, oh, we said to avoid the word assault.
and then you ascribe that to, you're saying a multi-billion dollar entity was being assaulted by people seeking equity? Wow.
Like,
wow,
people,
wow.
You want to be people wanting to be paid like $5 more an hour. I'm like, that's like, you're crazy. Like,
this is the thing, right? And it makes sense from the perspective of an oligarch like this. If you're used to making obscene amounts of money, like every fucking hour on the hour, anything that fucking threatens that order seems like an existential threat. It's the same shit you saw with white supremacists deal with anything dealing with equality. They treat that shit as an like existential threat. Black lives matter. Oh my God. Then ours don't. You know what I mean? It's the exact same response from someone in a place of, you know, in the hegemonic class or whatever, what have you, to look at this and say, this is fucking dangerous. This is bad. Mm-hmm. But also to not have the wherewithal or awareness to, you're talking to the fucking people that are looking for a better outcome. And you're saying like, I don't know if you heard about these fucking poor weirdos that want our, like, curb stomp Starbucks.
But that's like the super wealthy have this idea that you have to work your way up from nothing. And they're really repulsed by the idea that people might start off at a balanced place, even though many of them started off like beyond wealthy. You know, like recently I was offered a gig from somebody who's like, yeah, I'd have to bump you down to assistant and work your way up. This person is wealthy their whole existence, born into like family name wealth. And I was like, as much as I appreciate, I guess, the offer to come work for you, I've risen to an executive status. I can't go back to it. I literally could not afford.
You gotta work your way up, though.
I literally could not afford to go back to. And he was like, oh, well, my current assistant can't afford it either, but she really wants the gig. I don't know what to tell you, bro. I can't be your current. Yeah. I can't do what she's doing. It's a complete unawareness of, like, what it is to just try to survive. But again, these are the same people who, if you ask them, what's a gallon of gas cost? You know, I read recently that you're mostly impacted by the inflation if you make less than $300K a year. I instantly felt called out. I was like, oh, I'm poor. Cool. Great.
Wait, 300K was the thing? It's like, what?
Like, yeah, if you make above 300K, you're not really being impacted by the inflation. And so that's kind of puts into perspective for a lot of people, like, oh, this is the difference of, and 300K is not even touching extreme wealth, right?
No.
That is, it's just hard to conceptualize how people could be so upset about, like, maybe you can't afford your second yacht, but, you know, other people are literally just trying to keep an apartment. We have family every year. I'm like shocked by the idea of families piling into their car because it has air conditioning and just driving around as a means to keep their families like cooled off.
Yeah.
The disparity is just, it's unconscionable to come and then talk to these people and play in their face like this. But I'm glad the internet gets to roast him.
Hold on. NFTs,
but I also
bro.
Think it's like people like him don't know any poor people. Like these,
no,
like
no.
He literally knows no poor people. So it's like,
but people like that, they will say like, no, I used to be a working guy back in 72.
Yeah.
I was working with this guy, this feller. He came from Laos in Asia and we were working together shoulder to shoulder. And he told me how much better it was here in the U.S. And I think about that. How do I give that to my employee? Like, that's like the weird class awareness that these people pretend
Not
to have. It's like it's from
score,
60
Bob.
Years ago.
Not pre-credit score.
No, pre-credit score, yeah. Like, yeah. Like, fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
I also, like, yeah, like, you used to be able to, like, rise up a little higher. It's like, now you can't.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it's the playing field is so tilted now. It's very hard to know who actually has a head start because most people look like they're starting from some kind of deficit. But yeah, you know what? Bezos and Schultz, they've poured a lot of money into busting the unions at their respective companies because, again, that upfront spend of spending millions of dollars now to just even prevent, like when you even say, dude, that $4 million would have kept those people from wanting to unionize if you just invested in them. They're like, no, because then I'd have to do it everywhere. If I just do this one $4 million to completely go outside the bounds of the law to union bust, that's better for my long-term goal of making as much money as possible than to have people collectively bargaining for a fair share. No.
Join/slash support your local workers' revolution. It's happening. It's among us.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Part of it. That's the thing. I'm like, you know what? I know they're not liking this because the momentum is definitely not with them at the moment. It's definitely with the workers. And
no, the people see they can win. And the thing is, like Kellogg had to find out the hard way, we will just stop working because it's not that much of a difference.
Right.
The wages will just stop. So
they're like, I can figure it out. They're like, no, we can figure it out. There's some shit called mutual aid that can help me weather this storm. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back to just talk about these tickets, man.
Ugh.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, right, which is different than empathy, yeah, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Grammys. Anybody watch it?
No.
Cool. Moving on. there's some stuff that you should have put in your refrigerator door. Oh, okay.
No, I was going to say, I watched it like I watch everything through my Twitter timeline, which is essentially just so it was like, BTS is here, Megan Thee Stallion, Halsey wore super dope hat.
Right.
Oh.
Lady Gaga helped SZA with her dress.
Why was SZA wearing a tight dress and on like crutches? A 9-foot train and crutches upstairs? How she didn't have an hand to God, that was a miracle. Like, we witnessed a miracle last night, because any normal person would have fallen down and busted their neck. And the other thing, Anderson .Paak was cosplaying as which R&B star with that wig? I think it was one of the Isleys.
That didn't even come up in my text group.
It was like a bowl cut, straight hair. It's like an iconic R&B person's 70s haircut.
He kind of looks like fucking, who was Tina Turner married to? Ike.
Yeah.
But that's not him trying to be Ike Turner, right?
I don't. He's definitely cosplaying as somebody, right. Which I think is getting a little messy. Like, Bruno Mars was smoking a cigarette while accepting the award. I was like, that can't be allowed in that theater. Listen, as we said last week, we don't really trust the Grammys. Or yesterday. Yesterday, we were like, you can't really trust the Grammys. They don't know who to give awards to. It's really about money/connections. It's a messy award show. And that's saying something this year, in a year of incredibly messy award shows.
Yeah. I didn't catch the Anderson .Paak thing. The other thing I saw was the two things that first cropped up on my text threads, when people were like, are y'all watching? And I was like, no. And then someone's like, President Zelensky is talking.
Oh, that happened Grammys. Too.
And I was like, what? Yeah. And so I watched it. It's just that was like the very, very surreal moment where you have a president of a country who's in the middle of a war trying to fight back a Russian invasion, where he's being like, I hope the people of Ukraine know the freedom of those of you on the Grammy stage. And this guy is he's up there just trying to get more people's attention on the atrocities happening in Ukraine. Especially like now we're seeing this news of like the executions of civilians and more like credible allegations of like assault against citizens from like the Russian soldiers and things like that. That there's like real dark, real shit going on. And then for that to happen in like a room full of people who are like least likely to be plugged into geopolitical events, it was just like, it felt like he had become a meme in that weird way. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you got to do something woke and have President Zelensky give a quick shout out before Lady Gaga does some smooth jazz singing.
It was like the Steve Buscemi is like, hello, fellow kids.
Yeah, it just felt odd. Like, you know, it's like it's a very weird emotional juxtaposition of like things, right? Because like on one hand, people are celebrating their achievements as musicians, as artists. Yeah. And then this guy comes on is like, yeah, man, the world's really fucked up. Just so you know, like he said something to the effect of the musicians in Ukraine now don't wear tuxedos. They now wear, they wear fatigues, and they now serenade the injured soldiers, and like, you know, really powerful, like about a minute and a half speech he gave. And then just right back into the pageantry. It just felt,
It definitely feels off. But there's also something about how, I don't know how many people watch the Grammys now, but this, like, I know a lot of people are avoiding the news just as a self-preservation tactic, which I understand needing to take that in small doses, but I also feel like this is perhaps something that we should definitely not be ignoring. And so I understand like wanting to give that space, but I do think there's probably a better way to bring that in and come back out to our like very gaudy paid for award ceremony.
Right.
I don't know how to do that, and also maybe like launch the show with that bit of a downer.
Right.
But also, like, before we get into anything tonight, we want to
eat your vegetables first.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Then have just all the dessert you want, like honoring Louis C.K.'s comedy album.
Yikes.
And we talked about this when the nominations came out, everyone was like, cancel culture, who?
Yeah. Truly.
Louis C.K. is over here getting nominated and winning. Okay. And then winning. Kanye and Marilyn Manson. Kanye featuring Marilyn Manson win a Grammy for their track.
Damn.
Jail.
Like, jail.
You're like, hold on, y'all should be in jail. I mean, I don't wish jail on anybody, but you know what I'm saying here. Y'all should be banished from the good places where people go. Is what I mean to say.
He was in, that's the thing, he was banished to Ukraine during wartime. Remember that, where like Louis C.K. was supposed to be performing in Kyiv, like the night of the invasion?
Oh, really? I do remember that.
Like the show, like it was one of those things where it's like he was supposed to perform there and they didn't say it was canceled. Oh, and so like the people thought he was like giving a like big concert hall performance of comedy as bombs were falling. But I think apparently like it wasn't true. It was like, yeah, of course I was out of there. What are you talking about? That'd be funny if like Zelensky plugged him and was like, my boy Louis, he visited me during wartime. You should all check it out. Like,
oh, this is all getting fucked up now. don't do all that. But yeah, I mean, I think it was a just kind of a surreal moment. And then you see all of like that weird emphasis, like the Will Smith, Chris Rock discourse is continuing still with people being like, it's not enough.
You got to slap anybody who talks about it. Like, that's a new rule. Right. Like, why would you bring this up here? And now stop. It's over.
I'm also like, where's your energy for the Grammys, everybody? You know?
Yeah. Seriously.
Where is all the energy for the that's why you see people exposing themselves with what they're giving their energy to. That's what I'm saying.
Like Netflix deciding to put his movie on hold, but getting Dave Chappelle more like specials. Right. Wild.
The one demographic that could benefit from like some moral clarity is like the youth, you know, it's like Tisha was like, hey, there are consequences for your action, but like not really.
Yeah,
exactly.
So. Exactly. It's a surreal moment. But I did see Olivia Rodrigo dropped her one of her Grammys and broke it. So I like
that's
I was,
always
like,
enjoyable. Like that.
Yeah,
relatable.
Yeah, she's gonna get a new one. But I just like just the idea of like, oh shit! Like,
with so many musicians in that crowd, someone should be able to like re-put together the Curb theme song. Just like,
just on kazoos. See, that's what we need. See, that would have been sick. All those musicians, everyone has kazoos. And you just do these like rousing, like 10,000 person renditions of songs and shit. I see, Jono, we're already producing a better show for next year. Oh, man. And then lastly, I just want to touch on this article I was reading in The Takeout that their writer, Angela Pagan, was just pointing out that the article is called Keep These Items Off Your Refrigerator Door. And I was like, what the fuck? Hold on. Like, is this a real thing? Now, I do want to say before we talk about this, this isn't to say like you'll die if you keep certain food items on your refrigerator door, but it's more so I was educated on what the refrigerator door kind of is, right? So right now, I don't know what. I guess let me go around. What do y'all have on your refrigerator door?
Okay, what eggs, items? Butter, sauces, any kind of like drink, you know, lots of cans and or bottled drinks. Okay. Sometimes, you know, if a carton of, you know, the oat milk might fit in there. Mm-hmm. Parents used to have a fridge that had a gallon milk holder on the side of it, which I was like, brilliant.
Wait,
right?
What do you mean?
Crazy.
Wait, what's a gallon milk holder?
So like the door was structured in such a way that it could hold a gallon of milk in this like square pop-out thing. Yeah.
Okay.
It's those things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sauces, some butter, some egg stuff. What about you, Jono? What's on your fridge?
Real quick to clarify, when you said it was on the door, I thought you meant like the magnets on the front outside of it. It's just saying like, your fridge doesn't have the right mindset. Hang in there, baby. No, get something like destroy today, okay?
Right.
Start your throw this creamer in your coffee and get going, bish. It's like that, Your nephew's baby picture isn't cute enough. Get it? Your milk's going to go bad.
That goes to the side at best.
But yeah, all my condiments are on the door. All my condiments and a bunch of drinks like LaCroix and what have you.
Same. All my hot sauces are there. My salad, my Japanese cooking sauces that I use to turn up my dishes and things. That all goes on the door. Butter. But here's this very interesting thing that they were saying that actually, things like milk and eggs should not be on the refrigerator door. And I'm not saying should not be because you will die because shout out to all of us who have been doing this and I'm fine. But the refrigerator door is actually the place that offers the least consistent like cooling.
That's fair. Mm.
So like the second you open it, it's getting all of the warm air just washing over it. While everything that's on the shelves on the like proper interior of the refrigerator, that's where your milk should go. It's where your eggs should go. Okay. That's what you need to put that stuff in there. One thing this is an interesting debate. And I bring this up is this, they point to another article that was all about things that can or can't, don't have to be refrigerated. Ketchup and mustard.
Mm-hmm.
Do y'all put your ketchup and mustard in the refrigerator, or do you live like you see it at the restaurant where that shit is never refrigerated?
Mm. Mustards, I tend to freeze. Barbecue sauces, ketchups.
Wait, freeze?
Not freeze, sorry. Oh, I put it in the refrigerator. Like, that would be wild. I like my mustard sliced and to like slowly warm up on my sandwich.
Oh my God. Totally. Could you imagine?
Shaved on rice cream. Just shavings.
Yeah. Oh, like on a microplane?
Yeah.
Like dipping dots of fucking mustard.
Oh my gosh. No, I put it in the fridge, and then like barbecue sauces and ketchup and stuff is usually like in a cabinet.
Jonna, you refrigerate your ketchup, mustard, or do you?
Yeah. I mean, because we also like use it. I think with restaurants, they use like one over like the course of 3 days. Like I'm using a thing of mustard and ketchup over the course of a year and a half. So
Right. Well, but you know what? They were saying you can still let that shit cook on the shelf.
Really?
Well, it doesn't have to be.
I mean, it's not a good indicator about what's in ketchup and mustard that it's able to sit at room temperature.
It's all preservatives.
It's all sugar.
That's all. But it's perfect. Doesn't go bad. But part of me, like, I kind of like cold ketchup sometimes. There's something about cold. I'm weird. See, look.
I'm from Chicago. I don't even touch ketchup. Like, I'm just not familiar with her. But the idea of cold tomato paste.
It's cold sweet goo. It doesn't taste like tomatoes. Come on now. It's just red sugar goo that we put on all of our food. Wait, you don't use ketchup? I mean, I know it's absolute criminal to have ketchup on a hot dog. Mm-hmm. Obviously, and I know that's where that sort of hostility towards ketchup emanates from in the the great state of Illinois. But you're saying because of that, that's generally just puts you off to ketchup
across the board? Ketchup on anything. Like I'm not a ketchup on a fries, ketchup anywhere in the vicinity. I've never bought a bottle of ketchup.
Wow, Justin, engineer Justin, also from Illinois, said ketchup is for children.
Yes,
and you know what? Well, then call me forever young, Justin. So that's my secret because I'm regularly spiking my sugar levels by just downing cold ketchup.
Ketchup is for children, but like spiced ketchup is for adults. I have that sriracha ketchup or like those other like spicier ones that add a twist to it.
Right. Okay. Like
I like a sriracha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She and I are friends.
Wow. And then Justin, I'm guessing you don't use ketchup either at all. Okay. That's fine. No. I don't.
We're barbecue people. Sauce. Yeah.
Oh, so you'll swap out barbecue for ketchup context items? Like,
oh, yeah. 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 Barbecue sauce on fries. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Good. Okay. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is it the difference of brown sugar? Now I'm thinking like what goes into ketchup versus brown versus barbecue sauce.
Get a little molasses. Depends on how you make it. Sure. You know?
Okay, yeah. It's tastier.
Yeah, look, fine. I can handle that. I can handle that. I mean, and not even to say I was even like, you don't use ketchup at all, but I shout out to people who are just built like that, you know?
Yeah.
Unlike me, I picked up a horrible habit from this kid I went to school with who would eat every bite, like when we would go to like McDonald's or wherever, In-N-Out, every bite was at least 2 packets of ketchup.
Ew.
Inundating the burger. With ketchup, every bite was just like 2 packets per bite. And, you know, we would get high. So, like, I also was like, man, this person's leading me down the wrong path. I'm like, yeah, shit looks good as fuck. And it took like years later, someone I was dating to be like, you have to stop eating a burger like that in front of me. And this wasn't even Her Majesty who I'm married to now. This is someone else who was looking out for me. Shout out to you. Who was just like, that's not a good look for you. And I was like, okay, you're right. Maybe I do look like a child who didn't. Yeah. You look like someone who grew up without, like, where ketchup was completely banished from your home and you fetishized it as a result. And I'm like, okay, that's enough.
Your dad left when he went to go get out some ketchup and never came back.
Oh, no.
And that's why, okay? That's why I'm like this, Alexis. You see that? Now, please leave me alone.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.